You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this Sunday afternoon is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we got two more games to talk about, two more losses, but they might be the only games we have to talk about for a little while because the Islanders are now on hiatus, as they say in the TV business, postponed due to the COVID outbreak that they had a little too late, perhaps. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, things are not well right now, and a lot of it just is simply out of the Islanders' hands, which makes it almost feel both simultaneously better and worse than it possibly could have in other different ways.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at it. It's like there has been so much that's gone wrong for the Islanders that has been out of their control, that the stuff that has been in control, their control that's gone wrong, is like made you even more frustrated. Because, it's one thing to watch Adam Pellick make a mistake, but then it's another totally different thing when you're seeing, Grant Hutton make a mistake. And you just know that that should be Adam Pellick out there making a mistake, but he can't be there because of COVID. And obviously, like, with the way that this past week plus has gone, basically since the first two games at UBS Arena last weekend, it's been quite frustrating to be on this side of the curtain with the league, because I think everybody saw where this was heading, except there was one or two ways to get ahead of it, and they never did. And now, instead of, making the decision, obviously a lot more goes into decision to postpone a professional sports team for at least a week than you, me, or anyone listening will ever kind of realize. But sometimes when you see what's going on with the herd, I guess was right in terms of, like, everybody saw that the Islanders were heading towards this direction, and it was pretty hard to argue against that logic when I would say the Leafs game probably was pretty obvious that game was probably the last one they should have played, and you can't help but be mad. Like, you can't do anything about it now, of course. And look, the Islanders could have won a couple games too to make us feel a little bit better, but they didn't do that. So it's not like the Islanders on ice product is faultless here, because it's definitely not, but it's just it was very frustrating because everyone saw it was coming. I mean, even with, I think what's his face, I saw it was retweeted into my timeline, like Ryan Whitney was like, this is kind of getting to be a joke, and like someone from the Toronto Sun wrote an article,
Michael Tracos
like when those guys are kind of piping in, and I don't want to say on behalf of the Islanders, but kind of just on behalf of like the keeping like the competitive integrity of the league intact. Like you knew it was something was happening or should have happened and it never did. And it just screams of like the NHL has, when's the last time that they've kind of handled a situation? And once again, complicated situation, I get it. But like, when's the last time that the NHL has kind of handled the situation correctly, like, that's the best way to put it. Like, I don't know, because I don't think they did it here. Because if we were going to get to this point anyways, I don't understand what the point is. Was waiting and just infecting more people. Obviously, as we've seen, Casey Cizikas plus some staff members are now sick, and you know, all the best to everybody. But it didn't have to get to this point. I think a lot of people saw that it was going to get to this point, except and there was one thing to do to keep it from getting to this point, and it was happened a little too late.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most frustrating thing about the whole thing is, and our friend Carrie Haber was talking about this too, it's just a general lack of transparency. So, you know, the Islanders had seven guys before Cizikas. Josh Bailey came off, but now they put Cizikas on, and so it's still seven guys. They have a bunch, you know, they've added a couple of staff members, not Lou Lamoriello, as pointed out by Lou Lamoriello. And so now they're postponed. The Senators had 10 guys at that time also, plus assistant coach Jack Capuano. They got game suspended. But the Penguins and Sharks earlier this season had, I think, six or seven each, and they weren't suspended. And so, like, is there a magic number? Maybe there isn't a magic number. And if there isn't, that's fine. But, like, nobody knows sort of what the formula is or what the criteria are. And so it leads to, you know, a lot of frustration. Larry Brooks actually just had a funny tweet saying, you know, there are conspiracy theorists. Every conspiracy theorist thinks either the Islanders were desperate to play those four games at UBS Arena, or they were desperate to get them postponed. Like, there's no in between of like what, you know, who was doing what. And I don't think it's either of those two cases. You know, the league saw what it saw and finally postponed it. But like, to your point, you know, we could kind of see where this was going, and, you know, making the Islanders situation even more complicated is they're opening this arena. I guarantee that that was a factor. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, I believe one conspiracy theory or other. I don't believe any of them. But, you know, I'm sure that weighed in on it. I'm sure, you know, the team's performance kind of weighed in on things. But at the same time, you know, to come down a week later and be like, okay, you guys are postponed for two games now. And it's like, yeah, but we just played four games with a mostly AHL lineup. Like you said, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem like, you know, the best practices were taken, even if that is following the set protocol, and that's fine. Nobody knows what the protocol is, and it just comes off as being kind of shitty for everybody, you know, and it's nobody's satisfied, basically.
And they kept talking about, and a friend of the program, Elliot Friedman, kept saying like the word is contained, like they think this thing is contained, which was definitely not the case, I don't think. When, like, I think it was pretty clear that, okay, like, Josh Bailey gets test positive and he stays in Florida.
Right.
And then they come back and Lee and Johnson.
Which is, by the way, already a very odd situation that nobody outside of us seemed to really understand or care about, you know? It's wait, what? You know?
Yeah, the Islanders are opening this new building, and their longest tenured Islander is appropriately like that is Josh Bailey. It's so appropriate.
I promise you, if it was the Capitals and Tom Wilson was stuck in Florida for a week and a half, you would have heard about it every hour for that week.
There would have been a cam in there watching him, you know, punch the air if they scored or something. And, but it's nobody was talking about that. But then when Lee and Johnston tested positive, that's when I feel like, you know, the radar was obviously up for, and of course it was, like, it's not, you know, we joke about it, but it's not like people didn't realize inside the league, like, okay, the Islanders are probably starting, there's a situation in unfolding. And then, like the most frustrating part to me was when they, you know, after the home opener, and, you know, the Leafs game, gets played, and it's the Beauvillier, you know, he's got a false positive, but Bellows comes out. So like it was clear at that point, like, okay, this thing is definitely trickling through the lineup, because the night before, Pellick, Green, and Beauvillier, false positive. Like it was very clear this thing's going through the league, and this is what I was talking about. Like, everybody saw this happening and unfolding, and every day the Islanders had to have a press conference saying, like, hey, another guy has tested positive. If you have to do that, it doesn't sound like it's contained at all. at least, you know, to us. And I just don't understand. I don't know if it was because, okay, now they're going on the road, that they have to, we have to be more careful. You know, it's easier to contain, I guess, when they're playing at home. But it just, it became so frustrating. And there's been so many things, from minute little details on the ice, whether it's Kyle Palmieri hitting a post every time he takes a shot, or pucks rolling off sticks, or you know, just like clearance. Sebastian Aho keeps skating into his own players. you know, he has like a clear path, and for some reason, someone skates into it. And like, those little things are going wrong, but then big things are going wrong for the team too. And so I think what happened yesterday with the Islander fans, and there was like a lot of discourse and stuff. And I think, but the biggest takeaway to me was that everyone's frustrated for a million different reasons. And one of them was pretty much controllable, and it was, but it not on our part. Like, it was, there was another, the league was, had to control it, not Islander fans. So watching them kind of, you know, fumble that situation just was the boiling point for a lot of people. And I don't really think that there's any reason for anyone to get upset for somebody being fatalistic or shaking their fists at the league on Twitter, because they like, you gotta, you're a fan, like, you gotta let your emotions out somehow. And that's what we saw a lot of yesterday. And naturally that stuff ends up boiling over and people are getting frustrated with each other and all this, you know, discourse is transpiring on your timeline. And it's just like, oof, like, you gotta hope that the one thing I will say though, is like, I was watching this all happen. People argue with each other and talk about, you know, kind of outlandish conspiracy theories and stuff like that. But the one thing I was thinking is like, this has to be rock bottom at least. Like, this has to be it. Like, there can't be. Knock on wood. But I was just like almost relieved that, okay, we've hit rock bottom. Hopefully this team can start inching its way back into like relevancy. We talked about last episode about, you know, season over or season not over, whatever camp you're in, and the season's not over, like, but the season's different now, right? Like, the season now has turned into a long climb back into contention. And if they can even just do that, and salvage that and play some meaningful games at UBS Arena in March and April or whatever, like, I'll take that right now. That's where I'm standing and that's where I'm hoping they can do. And it just does this in this league. It does take just one kind of hot streak, and we've seen a lot of teams do it, and hopefully they can end up doing it. But my hope is that they can slowly climb themselves, you know, claw back into the race, because it will be unfortunate that if this kind of stretch of absolute hell, you know, just completely spoils a season that had so much promise.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the two games that were played, which were full of those frustrating on-ice moments. One of them being the 4-1 loss to the Rangers last week. Now, I am, per my personal policy that you all know about, I don't watch Rangers games. I did last year because the Islanders were playing so well. I thought it was safe. And so I did watch those last few, but I went back to my policy, reinstituted the policy. And I'm glad I did, because it was a 4-1 loss. Seemed to be very frustrating. Noah Dobson didn't play that game either, with a lower body injury, which again gets back to the whole, man, like, what else could go wrong? I mean, we're talking here. We are talking about the COVID stuff, which is obviously hugely important. But let's not forget Ryan Pulock and Brock Nelson are still also out with just regular old hockey injuries that we won't be seeing them for several weeks. But Kevin Rooney and Chris Kreider scored two goals each, and one of Kreider's goals, I forget which one it was. I think it might have been the first one. Like, is the exact type of goal that the Islanders haven't been getting this entire season. Somebody threw it to him, and Kreider is standing, as he does, right at the side of the net, and the puck basically bounces off of his shin and right behind Semyon Varlamov. Now, could Varlamov have gotten over a half a second sooner? Yeah, I guess so. But like, that's hockey. Like, that's just, that's the way it works. And the Islanders haven't been getting any of those kinds of things at all. And credit Kreider for doing what he does. He's got 15 goals this year. He's standing by the side of the net doing what he does. And that's the kind of stuff that you get when that happens. And the Islanders just simply aren't getting that kind of stuff. And when the other team is, and when that other team is the Rangers, it makes it, you know, four or five times even more frustrating. Andy Andreoff was the only goal scorer in that game for the Islanders, which is like, what? Who? Okay. You know, it got kind of ugly at the end. Peugeot hit Ryan Lindgren and, you know, I guess people got mad. Lafreniere was fighting and Ryan Reeves is talking shit like he, you know, has been here for 50 years. Dude, just shut up. Like, honestly, just shut up. Like, I get it. You're a tough guy. You want to make sure everybody knows you're a tough guy. The Rangers are a bunch of tough guys. I get, like, all you got to say is, hey, we fought hard and we won and that's it. Like, nobody wants to hear it. And you're just like making yourself look like a huge clown to just about everybody outside of your fan base. But, you know, it was not a very high event game. I mean, Varlamov made 17 saves, but Igor Shesterkin made 20. Like, and Barry Trotz said afterwards, like, they were dead even basically for the entire game until things just started falling apart and things started kind of falling for them. The next game was very similar. A 1-0 loss to Pittsburgh. I was at that game at UBS Arena. We'll talk about that in the second half. And halfway through the game, they were even. The Penguins came out on fire. Guy behind me, Penguins fan, was like, oh, it's like a shooting gallery. They had 11 shots, I think, to the Islanders 3 halfway through the first period. But then the Penguins went 10 minutes without a shot. And as the Islanders sort of clawed back into the game. And halfway through, it was still 0-0. And you know, both teams had chances. Then the Islanders get a power play. And this might honestly be the worst power play I have ever seen, and maybe the worst one in the history of the National Hockey League. It was just an affront to hockey. It was an embarrassment. People were booing, and poor Sebastian Aho, who you were just talking about, this poor guy is getting booed by 16,000 people because he literally forgot how to play hockey for 20 seconds. Like, the puck is bouncing off his stick. He can't corral it. There's some penguin on top of him kind of harassing him, and they're on the power play. And it was just, it was the exact kind of situation the Islanders have been in this season, where they get the power play, their power play does nothing. And then not only that, it leads to momentum shifting 100% into the other team's favor. Kasperi Kapanen takes a pass from Sidney Crosby and he scores and makes it 1-0. And it's the kind of 1-0. I don't want to say the game felt over, but it's just the most deflating 1-0 you could possibly think of, because you went from having the man advantage, the first power play of the game, you could have really established yourself, to playing just Keystone Cops hockey and then giving up the lead. And it was just unbelievable. So the third period, and then for the last few minutes of the second period, it was all Penguins, of course. But then the third period, it was mostly Islanders, except for two breakaways, which Ilya Sorokin stopped beautifully. One of them on Crosby. He got it with the blocker. It was fantastic. And they got another power play that looked a little bit better. And again, all it needed was one bounce, one shin, one stupid thing off of somebody's mask or a post or a skate or just something, anything to send this game to overtime. And that the roof would have absolutely come off that place, and they didn't get it. And Tristan Jarry made 25 saves with a shutout. You know, a couple of them were challenging maybe towards the end of the third period, but mostly they weren't challenging. It wasn't quite as bad as the game against the Leafs, where that kid slept through a 3-0 shutout. And again, it was just the effort was there, but there was no execution and no luck. And on one hand, you're like, this is incredibly frustrating. They've lost 8 games in a row. On the other hand, you're like, you're looking through this roster and you're like, who are these guys? Like, where are they going to go? Where's the luck going to come from? Where's the execution going to come from? Where is are the scoring chances going to come from? And the guys that you would think you'd get it from aren't doing it. And then the other guys were Bridgeport Islanders a week and a half ago. And it's just an incredibly frustrating situation to be in. It's so helpless. It's such a helpless feeling is really what it is.
Yeah. You know the power play is truly, truly historically abysmal when that second one that they didn't score on, but looked relatively competent. And when I say relatively competent, they just moved. They didn't give up shorthanded breakaways. Right. They were moving the puck around
a little bit. They had a couple of whacks towards the net, basically. Yeah. Is what it was.
And it sounded like the UBS Arena gave them a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Like, because they didn't implode and give momentum right back to the team that you just worked so hard to wrestle it from. Because that first period, the first 10 minutes of the game, the Islanders were just an absolute wreck.
Yeah,
like, it was a wreck. And Ilya Sorokin was terrific. And one thing that this team has been good at when it's in form is withstanding those pushes, like Barry Trotz says, like when they can recognize that when they kind of their backs against the wall and they adhere to some protocol and some systems and they just fight their way out of it and they get good goaltending. That's what happened. And they how many times over the years have we seen the Islanders do something like that? And you're like, oh, well, it happened against the Devils when they had a great first period and Mackenzie Blackwood played really well. And you're so frustrated because you didn't score in that when you had them on the heels. You could have put the game away just like that. And you know what's going to happen is that the other team's going to score a couple goals and you're going to lose. And for some reason, that doesn't happen with this team right now. But yeah, then you get the power play. I think one of the things is each game, I keep getting mad at like very specific people on the team or associated with the team. Like I was really upset with Matt Martin, obviously, on that play with Kapanen, because here you got Sidney Crosby leading a 4-on-2 breakout. And Matt Martin is back with a defenseman, I think it was Thomas Hickey. And he doesn't recognize that, oh, one of the best players to ever play the game is going, leading this breakout. I'm a forward back on defense. Instead, he goes into 2011 Matt Martin mode and tries to wipe him out with a check.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, he put a check on Sidney Crosby, great. But Matt Martin doesn't move too well. And so Crosby had all the time in the world to see that hit coming and turned a 4-on-2 into basically a 3-on-1. And Kapanen made him pay. And so, like, I was very frustrated there. And with like you said, like, even after that, like, they get the momentum back and they start to get back into the game and they start feeling good about themselves and they just can't get the bounce. And it was similar with the Ranger game because they played so well. I mean, relatively speaking, so well. Like, they hung with this team. They've shut down. I was so horrified of that top six being able just to run rampant over this defense. Like, you think Paul Ledoux is going to be able to stop Artemi Panarin? Don't think so. but they did. They were able to hang tight. And that power play resulted from they play a good period. They should have a little bit of momentum. And Matt Barzal took a penalty right off the opening draw to start the second period. And like you said, Chris Kreider, he goes to the side of the net. The thing that was most frustrating about that goal was that there was a clear plan there. Like, Kreider comes around the side of the net, knows exactly what he's going to do. The person who passed him the puck was like, okay, like this is a good opportunity to at least get something towards the net. Like, I haven't seen the Islanders make a direct play like that in this entire season on the power play. So that's like, and then when that goal goes in, it just, you know that the game is basically over because this team, it's a minor miracle and they score. It's I think they played over this 8-game losing streak, 24 periods. I think they have goals in 7 of those 24 periods. they've scored a goal in 7 different periods. That's absurd. Right. Like, it's just, and yes, some of it's bad luck. Some of it's bad, bad talent or bad players on the team relative to NHL standards. But a lot of it is just lack of execution too. And when you see something come off executed so well, you just are, I can't even imagine that. I can't imagine Andy Andreyov scores and you're like, wow, this team, that's a feel good goal for a player who's been working.
Made
a
2-1, right?
Yep. Made a 2-1, worked hard in front of the net. Like, exactly what you need to see. Like, you the cliche is always like, we need a dirty goal, a greasy goal. They got it. And what do? The fourth line comes out for their ceremonial post goal shift. And they get beat by Ryan Reeves. Like they all get beat. It wasn't just the defense there. Like, it was a pretty poorly played rush. I think it was Hickey and I don't even remember it anymore. I think it was Ledoux and Hickey. But they get 20 seconds later, the game's over again. So the Islanders, for the first period of that Ranger game and then for 20 seconds after they made it 2-1, felt like they had a chance in that game. And that's it. And that's what's been so frustrating is when watching these games, it's like they have to like earn their way into every game and they just haven't been able to do it at all. And when they do something stupid to give momentum right back, whether it's a bad power play, turnover or penalty. And it's so frustrating that this hiatus getting all these guys away from each other. And like, I'm not glossing over the fact that COVID sucks. Like, I had COVID in January. I was sick. It sucked a lot. And I hope everyone gets better. But like, just from a season standpoint, getting these guys away from each other and away from the rink is just not a bad thing from just a hockey season perspective. Like,
yes,
I feel like if I'm Matt Barzell and I'm leading a rush and I see that the only person on the rush with me is friggin' Andy Andrieff or Matt Martin or Paul Ledoux, I probably would just smash my stick to bits rather than throw it towards the net at this point, because you know it's not going in goal.
I'm glad you brought up Barzell, because I do want to talk about him. We've sung his praises the entire time we've had this podcast. This is year five now of the Barzell experience. He's obviously their team superstar. We love him to death. And, you know, I wouldn't trade him for anything in the world, but he's the guy who wears the frustration, I think, on his face the most. And he said he had they did a availability, and he said, you know, the attitude in the room is a lot higher than you guys think. And I believe him, but I think on the ice, then he tends to show that frustration a lot. That penalty he took in the Ranger game was hugely unnecessary. And again, basically after a period of being fairly even, you know, now the game is out of your hands, basically. In the game against the Penguins, his line mates were Zach Parise on one side and Richard Panik on the other. Now, I'm sure they're lovely guys and they're not unskilled players, to be sure. But if you're Matt Barzell and you're looking and you normally see Andrews Lee over there, or you normally see Josh Bailey, who, again, obviously he's not the perfect player, but you know, he's a guy you've known for a long time and you care about very much and you know how good he is as a player, and those guys aren't there and these two other guys are, like, I don't know what is going through your head. So he's trying to do too much and it's resulting in not a whole lot of anything happening. I mean, he was getting triple teamed by the Penguins in that game, because why bother covering Richard Panik or Zach Parise? Because, you know, if Barzell can't get them to puck, what difference does it make? And then of course, you know, one of them will cough it up and they'll just go back the other way. And I think for all of his many skills and all of his many incredible talents and his speed and his shiftiness, we have to come to the realization that at least at this point, and it might change at some point, he's still a pretty young dude, Matt Barzell just isn't the type of player to take over a game. He just isn't. He's not the kind, you know, he wants to be Sidney Crosby. I'm sure Barry Trotz wants him to be that guy, but he's just not that kind of guy who, you know, now when he steps on the ice, everybody gets excited. It's electric. You're hoping to see something cool, but the times that something cool happens versus the times where nothing happens are starting to shift in the wrong direction. And he's just at this point, he's not that type of dude to just simply take over a game and be like, this is our game right now and we're going to win it. And, you know, he's shooting more, but again, like everybody else, it's not falling for him. And, you know, his line mates are out and they can't really help him. If he had Lee there, maybe it would be different. Obviously, Eberle is a Seattle Kraken now. He's got like 10 goals and people are like, oh, they should have kept Eberle. You know, Kyle Palmieri right now, I need to call up Carey's tweet. Kyle Palmieri right now, I think, is shooting 2.5% this year. And the Islanders as a team over the last 3 weeks are shooting 3%. Let me make sure I got the numbers here. Carey posted this from the other day, which was on Natural Stat Trick. 3.20% the Islanders have a shooting percentage of in the last 3 weeks. The Vancouver Canucks, who we'll talk about in the second half, a team that everybody in the hockey world has just decided is falling apart at the seams, both on the ice and off the ice, is shooting 6.25%. So they are shooting twice as good, at 50% better, or 200% better. I don't know. I'm bad at math. Than the Islanders are, and they are literally falling apart at the seams. And the Islanders can't even get to that point. And part of it is Barzell. Part of it is Palmieri. You know, if Eberle were here, would that be different? I don't know. We've seen Jordan Eberle go 15 games without a goal in his sleep, you know? And so right now, none of that stuff is happening. And I think Barzell really, really, really wants to be the guy to pull this team out of this rut and make the team his own and make himself one of, you know, those premier guys that can just take over a game in this league. But he's just not there right now. And I'm not saying this is all his fault. He's doing the best he can. I love the guy to death, but it's frustrating to watch him get frustrated. And I think, again, of all the players, he seems to be the most frustrated by this whole thing, because he doesn't want to be this. We thought we moved past this part of the program. And here we are, right again. We're right back to where we were before.
Yeah, he said it. Like, you can tell when he is playing, like when he's tight, like when he's tipping the stick too tight, more than anyone in the league. And Beauvillier might be number two in that.
Yeah,
in that same stat, because
he verbalized it about that power play. Like, we're all still gripping them too tight now. Basically,
with Barzell, it's he tries to do maybe too much. With Beauvillier, it's just like weird, kind of like pucks, like a quick lapse in concentration or something. The puck comes off the stick, pass to absolutely nobody. It's just some strange things. And those things have crept into the game, which once again, like, is a reason why, yeah, the decision to postpone the Islanders has come way too late for basically everybody's liking and for common sense and logic. But it does give these guys a breather to kind of shake the cobwebs off of that. And I think Crosby is an interesting, first of all, yeah, Sorokin was amazing on against the Penguins, and it's been 16 years of Sidney Crosby haunting us. He picked up his 123rd point against the Islanders on Sunday or whenever they played. What's today? Today's Sunday. Mm. So I don't know.
Friday.
Whenever they played. And the crazy thing was that Ilya Sorokin, like, kind of has this guy figured out. He stopped him on breakaway. He was so good against him in the playoffs. And after he stopped Crosby a couple times, he was like chatting at him. And I don't know what he was saying. You know, with Sorokin, we don't really know, you know, we know he's got like this dry sense of humor and he seems to be a very affable character. So he's probably something funny, or it could have been, you know, they could have been discussing, you know, their favorite classical literature, Russian classical literature. I don't know, but it is fun to watch at least Crosby not every time, for whether it was against Dwayne Rolison or Jan Denis or Yaro Halak or Semyon Varlamov, anytime Sidney Crosby had a chance against the Islanders over the past decade and a half, it's in the back of the net. But not against Sorokin, which is nice. But the difference between, I think, Crosby and Barzal is like, we've seen so many times over the years with throughout this haunting process of Sidney Crosby to the Islanders, all of a sudden the Penguins will go through an injury crisis and two guys you never heard of are playing with Sidney Crosby and he turns them into millionaires because they play with him. They do well. And I think that's the thing. Like, yeah, Barzal playing with Panic and Parisi is probably not ideal, especially with the team fighting it offensively right now. But there are guys in the league who are a tier above Barzal that are able to drag players like that into productive roles. But I don't think Barzal is that. He's just a different kind of player. And when this team is able to roll four lines, and teams can't just hone in on him, be like, stop Barzal, win the game. It's a completely different story. I mean, even against the Lightning, you know, he took over that game for about 6 minutes. You know, he's going out there every other shift, but he takes over the game in a much different way. Like he just has a puck on a stick and he's able to find guys and create space for other guys and create lanes for other guys to channels for them to like skate into. And all of a sudden you turn a 5-on-5 in the offensive zone where the defense is packed in the middle. He catches someone maybe drifting towards him and Scott Mayfield comes off the rush like he did in that goal in game six. And there's just been none of that. I think a lot of it is just because teams are able to say like, hey, we can double team, triple team this guy at the blue line. Because even if he gets past us and he has a 2-on-1, he's got to shoot it because he's not going to pass it to Richard Panik right now. Mm. So it's frustrating to watch him be frustrated for sure. And, the hope is that when he does get Lee and, Bailey and whoever else back and the guys start to get put into like more appropriate roles, this thing will turn around. Because even a player like Kyle, I think Kyle Palmieri over the past four games, the games at UBS, I think Kyle Palmieri has probably been their best forward. Maybe I can't believe I'm saying it, but like it could be Aho at this point, their best defenseman. Both of those players are decorations more than anything, right? Like Kyle Palmieri he shouldn't be the one. He's like a perfect third wheel on a top six line. He's not the guy who should have the puck on a stick, carrying the puck over the line and creating offense. Like he's not the point guard. Mm. He's been put into that role because of what's going on. And he's done it all right, except he can't score like right now, which is really frustrating. But he's getting looks. And I think that, between him and, you know, when Kyle Palmieri and Sebastian Aho are the two best players on a team that, by all accounts, is a deep team, a team that has depth, it's not good. It's not good at all. So, yeah it's we're going to smash the reset button here. Hopefully this team comes back and looks much more like the Islanders did against the Winnipeg Jets on November 2nd.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. There were those two games that they look like themselves. But yeah. And that's the other frustrating thing, too, is like, how do you make changes, like particularly on the power play? Like, yeah, OK, obviously they're going to practice it. But like, how do you make changes when most like half of the guys who normally run the power play aren't here? Like, you know, how much effort and focus do you put on guys like, you know, Sebastian Aho running a power play that they ideally would never run? So it becomes, you know, what are you going to do? And that's, you know, Lou Lamoriello, what are you going to do? Like, there's no trades coming. There's no, all he can do is call up more guys. Yeah, I guess they could put Golishev in the lineup, but Trotz said he didn't feel like he was ready. You know, I mean, if he sees something that prevents him from doing that. But I mean, at the same time, I think it was Andrew Gross who, you know, he kind of couched the question like, not that we're talking about like a savior situation here, but like, what about Golishev? Yeah. Actually, now I think it might've been Brian Compton, but like, and that's right. Like, I don't think Golishev is going to show up. I kind of wanted to see him on Friday, but it's not like he's going to show up and like all of a sudden be, you know, I don't know, Denny Savard or Pavel Bure or something like that. So
no, but no, you're just looking at it. Like it's funny. Cause you think about Andy Andreev scores that goal against the Rangers, and I think there's a pretty good portion of the fan base that after the game was like, I kind of wish he didn't score that goal because I think it would have been a lot easier to put him in. And, oh, I just got to mention the Otto Koivula play against the Penguins too. I actually thought that they were going to win that game for some reason. Maybe I'm sick in the head. Basically until the Otto Koivula gets a wide open opportunity in front of the net. And you want to talk about bad luck. Like, puck finds him, finds his stick, but like right before that play, he hurt his hand or his wrist. Like he was like shaking his wrist. The puck obviously finds the guy who's dinged up right in front of the net, and he can't lift it. And Butch was saying that he thinks it was because of the injury right before that pass found him. But when Otto Koivula, like when he that was probably the best opportunity the Islanders had that entire game, and it falls to their sixth center. and no matter what, like, That's just one that needs to go in at that moment. And we've been talking about this guy, and or we haven't, but like just in general, he's been around forever. And you just kind of wonder like, what is it that these guys see that maybe isn't, that shows them he's probably not an everyday NHLer, at least right now. And I think that was probably the perfect highlight for it. And it was so frustrating to see. And one other thing about these guys too is Trotz, I think after the Maple Leafs game or the Rangers game, was asked just about the guys coming in, and like he basically was saying, I'm really happy with the way they're working, but the reality of the NHL is that some of these guys are going to take this opportunity and prove that they can play in this league, and the other ones just they'll be minor leaguers. And he was very blunt about it. And it's so clear. I mean, it's just like you're just like, yeah, like Grant Hutton, as hard as he's been trying, and as well as he's kind of been doing, he's been doing all right. Like, it's not like he's doing anything. He's just kind of it's the typical. As long as he doesn't show up in the papers the next morning, he probably had a good game. Kind of thing.
He had a play on against Pittsburgh where the puck came to him at the point, and people were like yelling "shoot," and he dumped it into the corner. And I told my friend, I was with my friend Gio, and I was like, "That's Hutton. You know, he's been with Bridgeport for a long time, and you know, I get that people want to see him shoot, we want to see a goal in the worst way, but that's not Grant Hutton's job. Grant Hutton's job is to dump the puck back into the corner, and that's exactly what he's going to do, come hell or high water. So yeah, that's the Grant Hutton play.
That's the safe play, right? And you just think about these guys, you're just like, yeah, like this is their opportunity, and I don't really. It's frustrating that not many of them have actually seized it, because you always look around the league at like when the Sharks were going through this COVID thing, they won a couple of games, and guys you never heard of are putting pucks in the net and stuff. And it is a little bit frustrating that none of these guys have. I think there's been really good moments for a lot of guys, and they're all like Robin Salo's been good, but he's being asked to be a first pair defenseman right now. Like he stopped Sidney Crosby on a break, and you're like, wow, like that was a great play by a guy who should never be in that situation ever again. and you know, he's if he was playing this kind of style with the rest of the guys, and you're like, the Islanders have a really good bottom pair defenseman right now, and he can obviously then grow into a bigger role. But when he's playing top pair minutes with Scott Mayfield, who isn't a top pair defenseman in his own right, and is limited in what he can do, everyone's going to look worse. But it is frustrating that there hasn't been like one performance really by one of these guys come up that has come up that you're like, you know, I'm really excited to see what, you know, so-and-so does to the next game, which that is a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. Now they're going to have to wait a little bit longer to maybe make those things happen. They were supposed to play today against the Rangers again at the Garden. They're supposed to play in Philly on Tuesday. Those are, and the Flyers, by the way, have lost six in a row. So that would have been a real barn burner. Eight losses for the Islanders, six for the Flyers. You know, Monday, you know, Tuesday night matchup in the, whatever the heck the name of that building is now. But now it's been postponed. So mercifully, I think both fan bases are like, oh, thank God, you know, but you know, two teams that really need a win, and I don't think my team would have gotten in, and I know Flyers fans don't think their team would have gotten it. So
that would have been a good one. That is one of the like the reasons to kind of take a deep breath about the season, and it's like teams just the NHL is all about streaks, and the Flyers 2 weeks ago were near the top of the division, and then look what happened. Like it's hopefully water will level out at some point in February or March. We're talking about some big games.
Hopefully, but they got a lot of things to straighten out, and at least the COVID and injury situations will get straightened out. We know that. It's the other stuff that is frustrating. But
yeah, it's a light at the end of the tunnel, which I, like, it was weird. It was such a weird experience watching these games because there really wasn't a light at the end of the tunnel during the streak at all until yesterday when they postponed the games. Like I remember, I was getting ready and excited about the Penguins game because for some reason, once again, I've convinced myself they're going to win, which I've done for every game of the streak. I'm like, this is going to be the one that they win. Maybe the goalie steals it. But then inevitably the other team scores one goal, which is insurmountable for this team, and those feelings run away. But when that goal does score, that you lose sight of any light at the end of the tunnel because you're like, oh, well, they're playing the Rangers on Sunday, and guess what? Maybe Josh Bailey is back. And as great as that is, like, and as great as it was that Josh Bailey was in the building, and it was, once again, the fact that he's kind of the face of this whole saga is something. Yeah. It's so Josh Bailey, and the picture of him in like an Islanders uniform, his practice uniform on Saturday was just so heartwarming. But he doesn't play defense. So the Islanders were still going to be trotting out a defense with Grant Hutton, Sebastian Aho, Robin Salo, and Thomas Hickey as their bottom four. So there really wasn't a light at the end of the tunnel. And now hopefully there is.
Josh Bailey, the guy who the last time he played, we were complaining, also hasn't been scoring. So it's like, this is the guy we're waiting to come back. The guy who was working on a goalless streak of his own. So yeah, that's pretty indicative of what's going on for me. That there are lights at the end of this tunnel. The problem is the lights are all like long-term lights next season, you know, the second half of this season, next year, a year after, you know, I go to Cap Friendly and I see lights all over the place, but that's not helping them get through this 8-game losing streak. But all right, we need to take a break. We're going to come back on the other side. I'm going to talk about my experience at UBS Arena real quick. I promise we won't make, you know, an ongoing thing of this whole UBS thing, but I did make my first trip there and it was pretty cool. And then we're going to talk about some other teams that maybe don't have as much light at the end of their tunnels that are honestly taking up a lot of the attention away from what's going on here in the island. So meet us back on the other side. All right, thanks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And now a word from our sponsors. First, always, is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor t-shirt, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You could use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 at the checkout to get 15% off your order. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Betway is the official betting partner of the NHL. Play Big Pick for free or play for real. Residents in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Idaho, and Iowa only. Check the link in the podcast description to join. Must be 21 or over. Terms and conditions apply. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Delicious Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, and Rosé, all under $15 a bottle. Available at your local wine shop and at UBS Arena. Please play and drink responsibly. So, I have been to UBS Arena, and it is, in fact, as Mike said last week, a theme park for Islanders fans. It is fantastic. Thank you again to Michael and Jillian for being very generous and helping me secure tickets for the game against the Penguins. Everything was great except for the final score. But it's really cool. Getting there is a little bit weird because there's a lot of sort of construction going on, but we were able to park in a lot right up in front, and we walked right in. The Belmont Hall, which is the bar right there, is open, so we were able to get in out of the cold, which was nice. They have a back room back there. I don't know if you got to go in there. Like, there's a back room, like a game room, and they have like bubble hockey and stuff, and they have a million pictures of Ralph Macchio. I guess, you know, that's what you get when you're Ralph Macchio. It's like, okay, you see one, and then you look at the next set of group of, you know, it's got the sort of TGI Fridays kind of feel to it, all this stuff, and you look again, you're like, okay, there's another Ralph Macchio. And then, there's Pat Morita, who I guess, you know, obviously worked with Ralph Macchio. And then there's another Ralph Macchio. So it's kind of weird. They also had a big picture of Bartolo Colon. My boss, huge Mets fan, took a picture of it. I texted to him. I'm like, big sexy represent UBS Arena. And we had a good laugh about that. And then you walk in the arena and like you go up the stairs and it's big. It's bright. The concourse is nice and wide. You got fan pictures on the side. You got the big murals over there of the Islanders. We walked the entire concourse. You can see the ice basically from just about everywhere. And it was super cool. One thing I didn't know, we did not find the speakeasy bar. Maybe next time. We weren't really looking for it. But one thing we did see was at some point the hockey pictures become music pictures and you start seeing musical acts. And I'm reading these things and it's like these are all bands and acts that performed at Belmont Park, which I, as a person that lived on Long Island for the first 26 years of my life, did not know hosted concerts. Who knew? And I'm looking at pictures of like Blondie and Dionne Warwick and Ray Charles and Frankie Valli all would perform there. And I'm like, since when did they host concerts? I guess it's been a while. I think one of the most recent pictures was of LL Cool J. I don't know when the last time LL Cool J went on a massive tour or whatever that played, at Belmont Park. And most people probably know him as an actor now, but I thought that was really cool. I was like, wow, how about that? Who knew? We walked around the upper concourse. We saw Shaq's Big Chicken right at the top of the escalator. My wife was like, are you going to eat there? I'm like, this line is too long. I'll get something else later. And we walked, and then we went to the supporters section, which has that beautiful view of the ice. We got our pictures with Sparky. I went with my best friend, Gio. Not only is it his birthday coming up this week, but he and I, when we were in college, we went to a lot of games at the Coliseum with the $12 student discount. I don't know if you ever used it or anybody else used it. That was our thing. Did you ever use that? The $12?
Yeah, it was, it became, I think it was $10 when I was high school and college with your student ID. And you got a burrito out of it too. Or
oh, dang.
My friend and I were talking. There used to be a Subway at Nassau Coliseum. I don't remember if you remember that, the Subway stalls. And that was like a huge deal at Nassau Cup. They're like, Subway's coming. Like we're finally getting into the 1990s in 2006. But like they were really excited about it. They made two sandwiches. I think a veggie and like a turkey. And the lines for Subway for the first couple weeks were outrageously long because it was such a big deal that they had one at the Coliseum. And then, you take that and you put it next to what's going on now. It's hilarious. $10 student ID into Loudville or whatever.
And then became,
right, the energy drink that sponsored it too. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called.
It got to a point where like the $12 tickets to see the Islanders were like cheaper than movie tickets. So like we just started going to more games. And it was always against like Hartford or Tampa Bay or some other team that, Phoenix or whatever, nobody wanted to watch. But we went and so we had a good time. So I thought that, it made sense to make my first trip to UBS with him. We had stopped at my parents' house before we went. And I don't know if anybody follows me on Twitter, you saw that I found my old Ziggy Palfy fisherman jersey. Had never been worn to a game. I got it at a garage sale probably in the late 90s. And back then, you know, the fisherman merch was verboten. You did not want to wear that to an Islanders game. But now it's kitschy. It's vintage. And so I put it on. I'm like, this is it. It's you know, meant to be. I'm going to wear this here. It still fits pretty good. And it didn't help the Islanders at all. But it was cool to kind of wear it. I saw a couple of other fisherman jerseys out there. But anyway, the upper deck was great. We got our pictures with Sparky, who was there. I shook the hand of Paul Cartier and I thanked him for all of his what he's done for the team. I just wanted to kind of get in there and say, because I saw him there. And we saw the supporters wall, which is really fantastic. You know, seeing it up close, seeing all the logos, looking at everybody, it's really cool. And it really brings home kind of like what you know, how much fan service has been put into the arena. Everything that I just mentioned, the wide concourses, you know, the million bathrooms, like all this is stuff, the way to see the ice from everywhere. Like even the aisles are noticeably wider than they were at Barclays Center. So like getting from one end of the, you know, your seat out to the aisle, you don't have to step on somebody's toes and crush their feet underneath. So that's pretty cool too. And that supporters wall is just fantastic. There's so many, you know, Gio hadn't seen it and he was like, oh my God, the UK. I'm like, you got UK, Brazil, you got all over. My personal favorite though, I got to tell you, is I think Isles Meetup San Diego is fantastic because they use the old Swingin' Friar logo from the Padres that I just love so much. And I was like, that's my favorite right there. So I thought that was really, really cool. And yeah, we got to, the tickets were really nice and we saw some of the lower, you know, index seats and stuff too. And it was just an awesome experience. And it's, you know, the way I think of it is like, imagine something you never thought happening, not only happens, but is like way better than you ever expected it to happen. And that to me is just this place. And, you know, yeah, the game sucked, but the experience was really, really cool. You know, the game experience is still very much like an Islanders game, but it's just, you know, the place is just elevated and it really makes you feel like this is really cool. And I love that they kept one thing from Barclays Center that I loved, which is like after the game is over, you basically walk out to the concourse, you walk down a short flight of stairs and you're on the street and you're on your way home. And I love that. I was glad that they kept that because when I saw that at Barclays, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I never thought of that. So that's really neat.
I really do think that the part of them keeping the game experience very Nassau Coliseum was a lot harder than people probably realize because obviously you want to make a buck out of every second anyone spent in the arena. Like that's how sports are now. And part of that is not built arenas to look like Nassau Coliseum in any shape or form.
Right.
But yeah, it's the sight lines and the sound, like nothing to worry about there. And I did find it funny. Like the concourse is so different from the Coliseum, which is the NASCAR track. You just know, you just got to keep turning left. And you'll eventually get back to your seat. Like you just, and this is partly because it's brand new and I've only been there twice, but I kept getting like lost in good ways during my first couple trips. Like you'd walk and you'd turn a corner and there'd be someone painting a mural or, giving out like free tequila samples or something crazy like that. And that's why it really does feel like a theme park. Cause there are just these, it feels so much bigger than it is, and every part of it is, you're not really, it's obviously the bar is called the Hyundai Club and there's sponsors everywhere, but it does feel like you're walking through this Islanders world. And it's who on earth would ever build an Islanders world is what I kept thinking.
But yeah, it's really bright and the ceilings are really high and it's very welcoming when you first walk in, you know, and you got those like market things and all that stuff too. And what I liked about it too was like, you know, with Barclays, the food was really spectacular. And I felt, though, that it was a little overwhelming. Like you had to choose what gourmet burger or chicken sandwich or God knows what you really wanted. Seems here that there's a lot less options, but I mean that in a good way. Like you can kind of just, you know, you want pizza? Do you want a hot dog? And so you can choose and you can go to a bunch of different places. But the thing that really drove it home to me, and this is what you were talking about last week when you said like the place is hilarious and almost too good for us. I'm walking along the upper concourse and in one of the stands, there's a guy at a carving station. Like he's friggin' carving prime rib in the middle of the concourse, in the side of the concourse at a hockey arena. It's like something you see at like a wedding. And I'm like, really? there's a prime rib carving station in this arena? that's a lot. And I don't know who goes to a hockey game to eat prime rib. And if that's you, that's awesome. I probably would. I don't know. I have to like sit and eat somewhere, but that was really my sort of like, oh my God moment. Like, holy crap. We have prime rib station now here at our home arena, which is pretty insane.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully at some point the team will win a game there.
Yeah.
And I just
they're not going to go winless forever. I mean, they're going to be there for 40 years.
Honestly, if this break didn't happen, I think they might've gone winless forever. But I right now what they have, three goals at UBS Arena, I believe.
Yeah.
And one of them is by Andy Andreoff, and the other two are by a guy who's hurt for the next 4 weeks. So it's I just can't wait to see and feel what it's like in there when things are going well. And
right.
Cause that will change a lot. Like right now, the wonder of it all is kind of gloss helping like paper over some issues with the team. And, I remember, the first night I went to this place called like Mogu, I think it's called. I'm sorry if I said it wrong, but, and I got just a bunch of General Tso's chicken and,
oh yeah, yeah, I know, yeah, I know the place. Yeah, the Japanese place. Yeah,
and I'm just like sitting there eating it, and I was just like laughing, thinking like, oh, this is so great. Like I'm just standing, and I've got like a lot of room. I'm in the concourse, watching all these Islander fans fly by, and as soon as I was done with it, and I threw it out, I was like, oh shit, now I gotta go watch them. Like you know, like it's like I at some point the game will take over from the arena being like
right.
the better part of the spectacle and. That can't come soon enough.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. They will figure it out eventually. For those in the building at that day, I congratulate you. Cause that would be a real fun experience. But, I think they'll eventually straighten themselves out. Okay. So, moving on. And again, I think we'll, unless something else breaks, or we find that speakeasy, we'll probably move on from UBS Arena for the rest of the episodes. I think we probably should address, you know, we can go around the league again a little bit because the Islanders stuff, I don't think has really gotten out to sort of the wider public. I know there was a couple of Penguins fans behind us that didn't know who the Islanders captain was. And I felt like turning around and being like, he's Anders Lee. He's been their captain for three seasons now, and he's currently on the COVID list, so don't look for him out there. So I think they were just sort of unaware that mostly what they were watching were Bridgeport Islanders at that point. And also, they were shocked to find that Parisi wearing number 11 is in fact the Zach Parisi. It was a father and son, and they were like, that's not Zach Parisi, is it? And the son was like, no, I think it's a different Parisi. And they were like, I was like, no, that's him, that's Zach. That's him? Really? I'm like, yeah, he got bought out and they brought him in for the minimum. You know, his dad used to play here. And they're like, really? So, you know, I don't know why I'm shocked, but that's kind of how it is. So I don't know how much of this COVID situation, the injury situation definitely hasn't gotten out there. But what's taking up a lot of time and a lot of the attention right now are teams in Montreal and Vancouver and in a certain extent, Ottawa, really struggling this season. The Canadians in the middle of a game last night lost assistant GM Scott Mellenby. He just up and quit because apparently he thought that he was going to take over for Mark Bergevin. And then the team was like, I think we're going to go in a different direction. He was like, well, then so I'm going to go in a different direction too. And then he quit. So that was pretty crazy. And then the Canucks are apparently moments away from firing their coach, their GM, everybody and everything that isn't nailed down in their office. And nobody knows what's going on. And if they fire coach Travis Green, he's probably get hired again. And if they keep GM Jim Benning, who's been there for 8 years and created this mess, there might be a riot in Vancouver again. I don't know what's going on. And so like, these are the top stories while the Islanders just sort of fall apart out here on their own in their new arena. Nobody's really paying attention. So it's been fun. If you listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast, Mike and I were just goofing about Elliot and Jeff before, like they're very invested in what's going on. Oh, and the Ottawa is also falling apart. People thought the rebuild was over. It's not over. And they put Matt Murray, their whatever $7 million goalie on waivers yesterday. So these things are what's taking the attention away from the hockey world. And I understand that. It's better than the Leafs, I guess. So that's cool. But at the same time, the Islanders are kind of just sitting here rotting while, you know, we wonder who's going to be working for the Canucks tomorrow. So there you go. If you're looking for sympathy, you're not going to find it from up there. That's for sure.
Yeah, I do think that these teams do provide some perspective. You were talking about like long-term lights at the end of the tunnel. Like even this next month, I think it has the there's a lot of potential because the schedule just is a lot easier than what the Islanders have faced to start the season. You know, you're finally starting to get into some of the weaker teams. I mean, that's another thing with the Islanders and the poor luck is like the schedule kind of just sucked for them from the beginning. And part of that is, the arena opening and the road trip, but also like the teams that they were playing, like they're catching teams at just the worst possible time for basically every night. Like the Flames come in, you're like, oh wow, the Calgary Flames are coming to open UBS Arena a couple weeks ago. Like that's not terrible. Hmm. Winnable game. This is a team that's basically supposed to be on the playoff bubble. Little do we know, they come through and Daryl Sutter has them playing incredible. Then the next night, who they play? The Leafs. Like the Leafs were on a crazy tear as well, for themselves. And then the Rangers and the Penguins, they catch the Penguins in the middle of a 4-game winning streak where they've outscored teams 15-2. Like it's just those are the other, you know, kind of poor luck things that only Islander fans will really kind of pick up on. But now all of a sudden that starts to let up a little bit in December, which is nice. And cause you look around the league and you look at a team like Vancouver, and they're one of the funny things. If you listen to the 32 Thoughts, or if you listen to Jeff Marek every day on his radio show podcast, every day he starts his segment with Elliot Friedman, no matter what medium he's on, with Elliot, we got to start with the Vancouver Canucks, even though nothing's changed. Like nothing's changed with this team, nothing at all. Like, and when it does change, I'm sure that for a week, you guys will talk about the changes and where the new coach used to coach in junior and whatever and stuff like that. But they seem to kind of, the Islanders have been the kind of sub headline for a lot of this, and which is fine. Like, you know, the media, the mainstream media, hockey media rarely talks about the Islanders when things are going well. And so it's okay when they don't talk about them when they're not going well. But I do wish, and I do appreciate that most of the time when I do read about them, there is a lot of context being given, like, look, this team is really going through it at least. But they kind of like gloss over it. They're just like the Islanders, who admittedly are going through a COVID outbreak, lost to the Leafs last night. Joseph Woll looked great. Like, no, he didn't. He just had to show up, basically. But yeah, I think the Islanders, and another sentiment I've kind of picked up is there are still a lot of people, not in the Islander universe, but outside, like, the Islanders are going to be fine. Like, they're going to get it together. And
yeah,
don't count them out. Like, only a fool would count out the Islanders, which is really heartening to read, because I've counted them out a lot already, every day. Those same people aren't saying the same things about these other teams that are going through it, like the Canucks and the Canadiens, the Senators, the Sabres, after starting 4-1 are terrible again. And and so it does give you a little perspective, like, yeah, like things really aren't going well for us. And hell, maybe it is a cursed season. We talked about the Dallas Stars last year when, with the COVID outbreak to start the season and the winter storm in Texas, of all places, and another team that just shot an abysmally low shooting percentage. So like you wonder, you know, one team a year that just kind of has the gods going against them, and you hope it's not us. It's not as bleak as it feels in the moment when you take a step back and you realize, okay, like, yeah, they don't have Scott Mellenby throwing a temper tantrum very publicly because he's not going to get like the job because he can't, he doesn't speak French well enough or something. I don't know, but I think I can't remember who it was yesterday. It was on Twitter. Like, the Islander fans have been waiting for adults to run this team forever. And like they are. And there are teams that don't have those adults running them, but.
Well, that I was going to say, that's our buddy Arthur Staple, and he's right. Like, you know, this is what I was saying before. Like, there are lights at the end of the tunnel, and they might be long-term lights, but they are lights. And some teams just don't have that right now. And we've been where, you know, we're making fun of the Habs and Canucks, but like, we've been there. My friend, Scott Matla, who does,
that's why we're allowed to make fun of them, by the way. Like,
this is absolutely, of course.
We're not punching down on anybody. We're like, hey, like, I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah. Nobody's earned it better, more than we have. But, my buddy Scott Matla, who runs Habs Eyes on the Prize and has the Locked On Canadiens podcast, you know, he was talking about if this is the end of the Mark Bergevin era, I guess it's hard to really categorize it. You know, there were some good moves that were good in a vacuum. They obviously had a bunch of really good seasons, including last year. But I mean, ultimately, you know, there was no sustained success. And I replied to him like, you know, don't get sad and don't get mad at me for saying this, but it sounds an awful lot like the Garth Snow Islanders era, you know, yeah. Moves in a vacuum that were good, players that were good, seasons that were good, but ultimately, you know, you'd have a good season and then the next year you'd be right back in the shit again. And it's like, that's kind of what's gone on with the Habs so far. And this year it's pretty bad for them. And so obviously that's a huge deal.
This losing streak feels a lot different. Like the crazy thing is, like, I can remember back to those November swoons the Islanders would go through under Scott Gordon and Capuano. Like, you do feel like at that point you're like, yeah, the season's over. Start calling up Kale Mollerat or whoever and see who is actually going to be able to stick around with this team and who isn't on Thanksgiving. And this is a lot different from that. Still, like, yeah, they're in a hole, but it's not a death knell, which is honestly shows you a 5-10-2 start not being treated like the season's over by everybody is just shows you where this team is compared to where it was for sure. Like this is it's quite stark in the way.
Yeah.
I think that was the 2010 November. I think they went 0 for November or something like that, or very close to it. And just thinking, like, I was in college and I was just thinking, like, and I think they had a decent October too. And I was probably pretty high on my horses there. I mean, like, oh no, this team is going to do it. And then November comes and ruins everything. And
right.
And I can distinctly remember just like my thought process of being like, you know, it's one thing to get to the playoffs and lose heartbreakers. Or, you know, to get close to the playoffs and play meaningful games in March or whatever. But it's a whole other thing, a whole other level of despair to go through that. And that's what those fan bases are going through. Yeah. And they've been going through it in Buffalo for 10 years. And for some reason, they are what the Islanders were, you know, a decade ago. You want to almost make a support group of everybody who's not the Penguins and the Rangers and the Leafs and stuff. Like, you'd be like, no, look, we can help you. We can help you, like, kind of see the light or whatever. And because another thing too, like, that's so stark is they kept talking about the Penguins because they're playing them like their playoff streak. Because obviously the Islanders beat them 2 out of 3 years in the first round. And just how unbelievable it is for a team to make the playoffs 15 years in a row, like making it 7 years in a row in the NHL seems like it's impossible. Like the Islanders making it 3 years in a row has been crazy to me. And, but 15 years in a row, like,
yeah,
God, I hate them. Like, it's just not fair because that means that they've just never gone through something like we're going through right now, basically.
Yeah. Like, well, and that's the thing too. Like, you know, it just, you hear stuff like, well, so-and-so team lost a bunch of dudes to, you know, injuries and whatever. And they're still, you know, battling for first place or second place in their division. It's like, yeah, but, you know, you can't. Okay. So like the Caps right now are without Backstrom, Oshie, and a bunch of other guys. And it's like, yeah, okay. But Alex Ovechkin still has 18 goals. Like, this guy is literally a machine right now. And he might end up with 40 goals this year. Like, who on the Islanders is going to have 40 goals? That's the thing too. And then the same people, some people might be like, well, the Islanders try and win every game 2-1. No, they don't try and win every game 2-1. They try and prevent the other team from scoring more than once, but they'll take 3, 4, 5 goals if they can get them. And right now they're trying to win any game any goddamn way they can because they suck and they need something. They're not trying to win any game 2-1. They would have taken a 9-8 victory any day and, you know, breathe a sigh of relief. So, not every team is created equal, but yeah, you think about that. I mean, the Red Wings streak was 25 years. The Blues and Bruins went 20 something years making the playoffs. It's crazy. But, you know, when you've got Al MacInnis and Ray Bourque and Steve Yzerman and Fedorov and yada, 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 all the way down the line, it's a lot easier that way. It's crazy.
One of my friends was saying, like, oh, like, you know, this, you were due for something like this, right? Like, the thought crossed my mind, sure, but I also thought about the Rangers and making the playoffs 10 years in a row till they sent out that letter, and then the Penguins or whatever. Like, yeah, there's just sometimes when you become successful in the NHL, it becomes a lot easier to stay successful than it is to get there. And I thought that's where the Islanders were, and it would take a lot for them to be knocked on their ass, and it did take a lot. The other thing, like, it's been a lot. It's not like it's not like Matt Barzal having a slow start to the season is what's causing this team to unfold. It took a lot.
Only Kyle Palmieri shooting 2.5% and everybody else was doing what they normally did, they'd be fine.
Right. Yeah.
But
it's been an absolute series of unfortunate events more than anything. Some of them are of their own doing in terms of like execution, but they're not shooting themselves in the foot like these teams we just mentioned. Like they don't have Pierre Dorion doing some dumb stuff, and they don't have the crazy owner of the Canucks, and they don't have just the circus that Montreal can turn into when either an English only speaker is behind the bench or the team doesn't do well. Like the city's not going to burn down because Scott Mellenby can't speak fluent French. So they're not shooting themselves in the foot, at least. And hopefully not on the ice. And at least they are on the ice. They're not doing it off the ice anymore.
But there is a difference though.
Yes. It still feels stable.
Right.
I was thinking yesterday, like I really wondered had, Garcinot been in charge, like what he would be doing about the league not canceling games since the start, because he didn't pop up much in the media, but like when he did, he would often say some hilarious and pointed things. So I think he would have called it like an effing disgrace or something and got in trouble. But
we all remember what was that?
I said Lou's never gonna obviously do that.
No. We all remember Garth's screed after John Tavares got hurt at the Olympics that went over real well. Maybe if you had more than one good player, Garth, you wouldn't worry about it, So again, if you're looking for sympathy, you're not going to get it from Canada or really anywhere, because this is the NHL. Unfortunately, as Barry Trotz says, this is not a pity league. I don't know what a pity league is, and I don't know if Barry has seen one in his days. He obviously knows a lot more about hockey than I do, but I believe him when he says this is not one. Whatever this is, it ain't that. So there you go. We'll be back at some point when the Islanders are back. We have absolutely no idea. There is a game scheduled for Thursday against San Jose. There's another game Sunday versus Chicago. I have tickets for that one too, but we'll see how they play out. I could see either one or both or none being canceled as well. So we'll have to see how that goes. But in the meantime, read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Visit VintageIceHockey.com. Check out Betway. Check out Pinot Project Wines at thepinotproject.com. And we'll be here whenever they come back. Thank you for listening. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Read Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read his work at The Action Network. What do you got going on this week, podcast appearance-wise?
We are actually launching a hockey betting podcast called Line Change, and that will start on Tuesday morning, I believe. Tuesday and then Thursday. Canada gets legal sports betting on December 1st, so that's the timing there.
There you go. Man, I love that title. That's a great title, Line Change. It's a hockey thing. It's a betting thing. The Lions are changing. So that's really cool. All right. Yeah. Check out the Line Change. That sounds awesome. We'll be back whenever we're back. I don't know. But that's it. And I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife yesterday and I loved it. My wife and I were literally in tears by the end of it. If you grew up with Ghostbusters and you have kids and you want to get them into a watch, they'll think you're weird, but trust me, it meant a lot to us. And we loved it. I also think I'm just about done reading movie reviews because I read reviews that made it sound like the worst thing ever committed to film. And it is not. It was delightful. I enjoyed it. And that's about it. So thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you sometime next week, I guess. And good luck to the Islanders in sorting out all the things that ail them right now. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.